We ready to have a meeting? My name is Alex, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday 8 p.m. Blue Chip Speaker Meeting at the NAVA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual, in our personal stories, describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org we'll hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Our speaker was here last week, and I feel like I've been waiting 7 years instead of 7 days to hear her speak. And tonight we have Daisy coming to us from the Think It Through Sober Group here at NAVA.
Hi, everybody. I'm Daisy, and I'm an alcoholic. It's an honor to be here tonight to be able to tell my story to the people who have helped me so much along my journey. Got my notes, which I'm going to have to refer to. So what I'm going to talk about is what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Standard story. I was born on September 22nd, 1972, don't really like saying that part, in Washington, D.C. And we moved to Charleston, South Carolina when I was about 2 years old. And my mom went on to have three more kids, my sisters, whom I'm still very close to this day. And even though I had a close family, especially among my siblings, I always kind of felt outside of things. Like, I just kind of didn't get what other people got. I didn't really understand. I had trouble like relating to people. It's hard to articulate, but for me, I always felt like one step behind, kind of like other people were getting the joke and I didn't get the joke, kind of thing. My first experience with alcohol was when I was 13 years old. I was unfortunately not proud of this babysitting with a friend of mine, and we thought we would break into the parents' liquor cabinet. And she was a little more seasoned with this kind of babysitting drama than I was, and she poured me my first drink, which was a big solo cup, half vodka, half Coca-Cola. This was not a delicious drink, but I managed to power it down, and then I had another one. She said, oh, yeah, I thought I was fine, you know. I didn't really know that I wasn't fine. I was not fine. When the parents came home, I was in the bathtub vomiting, and the other babysitter was passed out on the floor. So my apologies to all of you with parents. I think they have better guidelines now, or who with children, I think they have better guidelines now. But anyway, that was my first experience with alcohol, and I didn't like it, y'all. I didn't like it. I didn't experience anything great. I experienced some real embarrassment, and my parents were not happy with me. With the result, well, I can't say it didn't affect me, because I think after that I started acting out. I don't know if it was related, if it was due to hormones and just being a teenager, but the upshot was I got sent away to school at 14. And the school I went to was like this kind of progressive, like, you do what you do. It was like a college set up for people who didn't really have to go to class, and there wasn't a lot of like real oversight or anything. It was just kind of like, do what you want and just, you know, take care of yourself. This will teach you about life. It was the 80s, I'll say that, but it was a strange school. because there was so much freedom. So much freedom. My parents signed a release for me to smoke cigarettes, and so I was able to smoke in my room, and obviously alcohol was everywhere. Everywhere. And I still didn't feel a part of anything. When the alcohol started getting passed around, I started drinking it. And this time it took. It took pretty fast. Felt like I was okay, but other people, like the teachers I would see, would say things like, "Are you okay? Like, you seem kind of down." I was crying a lot. Like, yeah, I didn't feel that great. But I thought, well, maybe it's a little bit of depression, you know? And then, you know, just kept drinking every night. Got into some other stuff. Nothing super heavy. But still, it was outside substances. And then one day, I didn't wake up. I hadn't been asleep, but I sort of looked around and I was in a hospital. So that was my first institutionalization. I was found catatonic in a closet. Apparently, so catatonia is when you're unresponsive, but not unconscious. And but this is very shameful to my family, right? They didn't want to admit this, but they also kind of didn't want me home. But it was December, and so my mom drove up to D.C. where I was, where I've been sent, and she picked me up and brought me home. And they didn't want anyone to know I was back. This is okay, y'all. I've come to terms with this. At the time, there was a lot of resentment, which I've worked through, and for many years after. But anyway, so I went into outside help, went to another hospital locally, and eventually they said, "Oh, fine. You're fine. Go back to school." So I went back. One guess, what happened 3 months later, right? So I'm back at the school, I'm drinking, I'm doing outside substances, back in the hospital, back home, back to school. That cycle continued throughout the rest of my high school. So 3 years, just back and forth, really, between a place I was scared to be. I was scared to be there, away from everything I knew, from all my friends. I didn't understand the people I was with. I didn't understand anything. I just knew that drinking made me part of the clique. Drinking made me part of the group. I would get invited to parties. I would get invited to things. I felt like I was just like, why am I being invited? I'm, you know, so dorky. And then I would have a drink and I'd be like, oh yeah, I can rock and roll with these girls. But I could not rock and roll with those girls. In fact, what was happening is I would just always end up back in the hospital. So that went on, you know, until I got out of high school, from my local high school. And then I went on to college. And I've heard a lot of people in here say, like, I don't know how this happened. I didn't go to class that much. But after 6 years, I did manage to graduate. But during that time, the binge drinking started. So it wasn't daily drinking, but it was, my purpose was to drink to blackout. That was my goal. And I would achieve that goal on a regular basis. Got arrested a couple of times in there for just some kind of weird stuff, like drunk and disorderly one time. Passing a bad check another time to the grocery store. Like, who does that? You know, like, why was I doing that? It just seems disorganized, you know? And that was my college. I graduated, and then I was lucky enough to have my dad hook me up with a job. And I loved it. I loved not being in school, for one thing. I was never like a student, biggest student was never my favorite thing. So I got a job, and I loved it. And I felt like I could really do a good job here. So I'd get in early, like I'd make the coffee, and you know, I'd set up for the day. I could smoke in my office, y'all. I mean, that was like probably a big draw of the job. But I really, really enjoyed it. And I got married during that time. I went to night school, too. I was able to go to night school, and it took me 5 years, but I graduated. But during that time, while I was going to school, about 4 months into the marriage, I flip switched somewhere in there. And I wish I could remember a triggering event, y'all. A lot of this is unclear to me. You know, like I was writing this down, practicing, and I realized I don't have like a clear memory. I know to a degree what happened, but I can't say like, all right, 4 months in, this triggered it. Something happened, and I started going to the bar down the street every single night. Every single night. Marriage was not good. You know, I don't know what I was thinking, but I started going to the bar every night, staying up till 2 in the morning, and then I'd wake up, throw up, go to work every day. My weight plummeted. I was pretty sick. And finally, I decided I'd had enough. So I wrote some notes to my family and hit a big overdose. And then I was found by somebody, I don't know. I think it was the person I was married to at the time. And back in the hospital, pumped my stomach, my heart stopped. They brought me back to life. And I don't remember any of this. I remember after, you know, the charcoal and everything and like the you know, thing to my chest that I woke up for a moment and my mother was standing there for me. She said, "You didn't mean to do it, did you, Daisy? You didn't mean to do it." She still wanted me out of that hospital. She still didn't want me in the hospital. But I said, "I've always meant to do that. I can't live this way." I could, and I could for about 30 more years. I could live that way, and I did. So after that, got divorced. My mother took me in for a year, kept going to that same bar every night, drinking, waking up, throwing up, going to my job. That job was not permanent. So after enough of this, I got fired, obviously, from that job. And then my mom had kind of outstayed my welcome a little bit, which is perfectly understandable. She's been kind to let me stay for as long as she did. So I moved into my own place, and I had totally free rein for drinking. So it became drinking away every night. And or go to a bar, you know, talk to the bartender who would be like my friend, you know, I'd be like, "My friend Billy, you know, that's not your friend, Daisy, you know, they're serving you alcohol." Met another guy, got engaged, realized I can move away from this town where everybody hates me, this small town, because in my mind, everybody hated me. Everybody thought I sucked. Everybody thought, like, what a loser you are, you know, like, you just, you know, I had a really, not a very good opinion of myself that was probably true internally, but I just don't know. I just know that I thought they hated me, and I hated them in return. So I tried the geographical location, and I came here to Atlanta, and this was 10 years ago. After I came to Atlanta, got married, and the progressive nature of the illness started to kick in, and things got a bit violent, a bit disturbing at home. And it was kind of okay, you know, like alcohol kind of softened it. It made it okay. Like I didn't understand that I was in a really, really screwed up situation that was partially of my own making or largely of my own making. 'Cause I was like, all right, have a drink, Everything's fine. And then things would go sideways, but I couldn't pull it together, like, or put it together, like, all right, you have a drink, he has a drink, you can't stop, he can't stop, and all of a sudden, it's 11 o'clock, you're locked out of the house, and you don't have car keys or a place to sleep. Like, that's, I couldn't, how could I not put that together? But I didn't. Then I get diagnosed as a bipolar type 1 rapid cycling back when I was like 21. I kind of had the sense that I knew other people had that diagnosis. I'd read a lot about it and I understood that what I had didn't quite match up, but I didn't really process that. I just thought, well, you know, that's the diagnosis. A doctor told me that I am mentally ill. I'm clearly mentally ill, and this is the result, and this is how it'll be. Looking back, a lot of the therapists that I went to, and I went to a lot because I didn't always hear what I wanted to hear, they would say, you know, how much alcohol do you consume? Well, clearly, I consume a glass of wine with dinner every Saturday night. I mean, of course that's what I do. No, it's not what I did. I consumed 2 to 3 bottles of wine a night, and that was what I did. But when I moved to Atlanta, I had a different, I was getting outside help from a different person. And I always tell this story because it changed the course of my life. And I went in and I told her what had happened the night before. And the violence and everything had escalated so that when I came in, she just said what happened and I told her. And she listened and she was very calm and quiet. And then she wrote me a prescription on a prescription pad. And I thought, well, good. Drugs, you know, something to take the edge off. And it said 7 meetings in 7 days. That's all it said. And she said, you're going to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you're going to go for 7 days in a row. And I trusted her. I believed her. And also, she was my only lifeline out of the life. She was my only piece in that life I was living. So I went. So what happened? That night, that things were really bad, the night before before I went to see my doctor, it had been my birthday. I won't go through the whole thing, but I ended up, after a day of drinking, lying on my porch with my dog, with a bottle of vodka, and I lay back, and I was kind of watching the airplanes and the stars, something, like a moment of peace descended on me, like just for like a split second, just like peaceful moment, and I was so calm, and I felt like, okay. And then it left, and it's wandering around again. But the next day was when I went to see the therapist, and she gave me that prescription. And so then I happened to live down the street from High Noon, which I had never visited before. So I went to High Noon right then. And it was cold. It was September. It was already cold, and I had this big coat, and I put it on, and I, like, kind of tried to hide in it. I had, like, a hat, and I go in there to High Noon, and I creep in and sit like in the way back, and like any of you have been, there's like pews in the back. I haven't been in a minute, so I don't know if they're still there. Just sat right in the edge, and I saw somebody across the room like lift their arm. It was a bartender at one of my favorite bars in Atlanta. So I knew somebody. And I knew somebody who was in my drinking world who was also there. So it felt good. It felt good to have somebody just reach out. I realized at this point, so they started the readings, right? I got there on time. Didn't have much else to do. Was unemployed. And they started the readings. And I realized I didn't understand what these words I mean, we admitted we were powerless. I didn't understand. So I tried to follow along, right? Tried to follow along and read along. And I realized I lost the ability to read. And my reading comprehension was gone, and also the ability to understand words had left me. And that was a little scary to me in a way, but it probably should have been scarier. I went. I did what she said. I heard things after about the fourth day. I heard one person say, you know, a lot of people think, like, I'm okay. And I thought I was okay because I had, like, a nice car. I had nice clothes. I had a nice house. But this person was saying, I was completely dependent on somebody else. They were saying what was happening to me. I had a car. I had a house. It was all dependent on somebody who was not good for my mental health or my state. It was not a good combination. And my entire financial state and living situation was dependent on this person. So, in other words, I was going to be homeless at some point. So I understood that, and I just heard that, and it wasn't anything like I made a deep connection. It was just something I heard. And I think this is sort of an important point for me, because it's like we never know what we say to anybody that may make a little bit of a difference. And that person, whoever they are, I don't remember anything other than that. But the next thing I heard was 90 and 90. And I thought, well, you know, I'll give it a shot. I don't have anything else to do. And I'm sort of at the end of my rope. I'm at the jumping off point. And I knew from my past history I knew where my mind was going, and it wasn't going in a great, great place. People were nice to me. I'd walk outside after, and somebody let me bum a cigarette and talk for a minute, and then I walked back to where I lived down the street. And the contrast was kind of amazing, like my home life versus how kind people were and how non-judgmental they were and how accepting they were. I knew I couldn't read, but I bought a big book. Somebody told me to get a big book. It took me about 6 months to really be able to start it, but I started with the stories in the back, and I could understand that. I got a sponsor. The sponsor helped me understand certain things about the readings, about the steps, about the traditions that I couldn't understand on my own. I know, I genuinely took step one. I admitted I was powerless over alcohol. I knew my life had become unmanageable. It was clear. It was clear. It just hadn't been clear to me. So that's where I got sober, was at high noon, and I started going to Triangle. So I did 3 meetings a day, and I really, really, really liked those meetings. I really did. People were as destroyed as I was, and listening to the shares, I realized, like, I don't feel alone anymore. I don't feel outside when I walk in this room. I feel like this is my world. These are my people. And I get it. And I did get it. That's the thing. I did get it. And that was good, you know, that I had that. And I'm grateful, so grateful that I had that time. There's something in a vision for you, which is chapter 11, that I just want to read for a moment, that has to do with what happened when I was lying on the porch that night that I mentioned with my dog. And I believe that was the first time that I had really been visited by the hideous four horsemen. And then I was granted a moment of reprieve from that. So I'm just going to read from chapter 11. This is page 184. Something that really, really, I think we've all, not, I can't speak for anybody else, but I will say what they say here. Unhappy drinkers who read this page will understand. Chapter 11, A Vision for You. For most normal folks, drinking means conviviality, companionship, and colorful imagination. It means release from care, boredom, and worry. Joyous intimacy with friends, and a feeling that life is good. But not so with us in those last days of heavy drinking. The old pleasures were gone. They were but memories. Never could we recapture the great moments of the past. We can't, right? I mean, this was what happened. I kept trying to get back to that sweet spot, but I couldn't. There was an insistent yearning to enjoy life as we once did, and a heartbreaking obsession that some new miracle of control would enable us to do it. There was always one more attempt and one more failure. The less people tolerated us, the more we withdrew from society, from life itself. As we became subjects of King Alcohol, shivering denizens of his mad realm, the chilling vapor that is loneliness settled down. It thickened, ever becoming blacker. Some of us sought out sordid places, hoping to find understanding, companionship, and approval. Momentarily, we did, and then would come oblivion and the awful awakening to face the hideous four horsemen, terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. Unhappy drinkers who read this page will understand. It is terrifying to have that, and that is where I was.
What it's like now. Okay.
It's different. It's very, very different. And it's thanks to this program. And a lot of my dear friends are here tonight. And these are people who have supported me throughout so much. And one thing I will say about that is that when I was able to leave the marriage I was in and first get sober, that enabled me to leave the marriage that I was in. There were people in this room who told me what I didn't want to hear. And that was, it's time. You need to go. I had no financial resources whatsoever. And just backing up a little bit, because we're not at what it's like now, obviously. After I'd been sober for about 3 years, I left, and I didn't have any resources, but I did have a car, which I later totaled sober, right? So it was, I don't know what that was all about, but I drove, and I knew I didn't have a bank account. I knew I didn't have cash. I knew I didn't have credit, because I'd been living with this guy for a while, and he was taking care of me financially. So I'm driving around and I see a sign that says apartments for rent. I drive in. I walk in. It was almost like I was on autopilot. I walk in. There's a guy in there. He says, "Hey, I'm Alex. Would you like to put your application in?" Sure. I want to go home, you know. So I put my application in. It passed. I got an apartment. I could leave. I could leave. And I did. I never went back after that to that house. And I didn't have furniture, and I didn't have a job. I was able to get power to the apartment, and through the same mysterious situation. And then I lost my car. Realize I was going to have to walk through the rain. That's okay, right? That's okay. I can walk. But I was worried about some sort of money because he had pulled everything out of my bank account. I didn't have any money or any means of paying the rent for this apartment that I'd gotten. So I got a job. And it was within walking distance. I started walking around the neighborhood saying, "Hey, can I help you with anything? Hey, do you have anything?" There was a law firm. And, well, I can scan things, and I can file, you know, and it did, for $15 an hour. And then I got granted through this program a friend
who offered me a job that I still hold today. And it was amazing. It was amazing. After I had that job for a little while, I was able to buy a car. I couldn't believe it. So what it's like now, it's 180 degrees different, y'all. I'm a different person. I feel like the 3 or 4 year old that I was at one point, almost like innocent in my outlook on the world. Like, I believe positive things about people. I think people are trying the best they can every day. I didn't think that before. I thought everyone was mean to me. Learning in this program to help others has become like a way of life to me. And it's not, I want to help anybody in any way I can. And I want to manipulate somebody to get my way. I want to look at someone and be able to see if they're in pain. And if they are, you know, listen or help or do something. That's not because I'm a saint. I'm not a saint. I understand what it's like to be in a lot of pain. And I learned that here. One thing I'm really grateful for is I had a lot of secrets before. I didn't want to tell anybody anything. I was so ashamed of so many things I've done. Through working the steps, I feel like I don't have those secrets anymore. Every single shameful thing I have told somebody. I didn't mean I want to tell them every day. I mean, I'm going to say it now, but there are some things I really, really wish I hadn't done, but I did them, and I had to admit them. The obsession was lifted years ago, and I am grateful for that every day. Gratitude is with me all the time. I can't believe the life I lead today. And it's true, for me at least, that you don't get everything you want. I still don't have everything I want, but I have everything I need. And now I realize that's what I wanted all along. So just in closing, I just kind of want to read. So every morning I read, like, just real fast, the daily reflections. And I was kind of looking through, thinking about this talk, and I saw one, and it sort of exemplified what I wanted to say. It's from June 22nd. I'm Warriors on June 22nd. But it's called Today I'm Free. And it's on page 182 of the Daily Reflections. I am learning to practice acceptance in all circumstances of my life so that I may enjoy peace of mind. At one time, life was a constant battle because I felt I had to go through every day fighting myself and everyone else. Eventually, this became a losing battle. I ended up getting drunk and crying over my misery. When I began to let go and let God take over my life, I began to have peace of mind. Today, I am free. I do not have to fight anybody or anything. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I'm really glad I don't have to fight anything or anybody anymore. Most importantly, I'm glad I don't have to fight myself anymore. Thank you, Daisy. It's a great thing. We had asked Kathy to do the chat.
I'm Kathy. I'm an alcoholic. Yeah. I'm talking about chips to denote one's time in the program or to begin the program. If you are new or if you're coming back, this white chip is for you. It has been a minute.
told. It ended bad. I need to settle the score. Promise left you twisting in the wind.